You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more. Today we're talking with Dennis Elliott. Dennis, thanks so much for being with me today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So Dennis, there's a lot we could talk about in terms of your involvement with the arts, but perhaps let's talk about being the founder of an institution, how something like that begins, if I could put it that way.
Well, it doesn't happen overnight. I came to New York in 73 as hundreds of other MFA graduates doing all the cottage industry jobs, like working for other artists, working for galleries, art handling, museums, all that. And I thought there had to be a better way. So I'm not that that's bad, but I just thought, so I contacted my alma mater, which is California College of Arts and Crafts, to see if I could set up a program for them. I sent them this detailed proposal, never heard from them. But something must have been in the air because Nova Scotia College of Art and Design contacted me and asked me to set up a program in New York. And at that time, Nova Scotia was, that and Cal Arts, I thought, were the two premier art schools on the continent. And so I set up a program for them in 1980. And then from that...
And let me just interrupt you there. When you say set up a program, was that very similar to the program that you had outlined to your alma mater? And like, what was
mine was a little more ambitious, I thought. Their program was simply, I got them a loft, and then they would send classes of 10 with a faculty member, and they would stay in the loft, and I would just sort of give them direction as to what shows were happening. It was very informal. I mean, formal isn't the right word, but it was very open-ended, and I really had, it was kind of uninteresting to me. It was just a job that paid me some money, and I did meet a lot of interesting faculty members and some students from NASCAD, but I moved on to the Alliance Independent Colleges of Art. I kept both programs going, and that started in 85, and that was 18 American colleges and 4 Canadian colleges, and they're all the major ones, like San Francisco Art Institute. Anyhow, all of them. And that they sent me a student or two for a semester, and we housed them, and I did a program for them, which was really, I thought, a very privileged education for them because...
This is very interesting to me. Just to get it clear, they'd send you a student or two, and they're staying in your loft in the city
No.
Your housing.
They said each institution, like I was dealing with 18 colleges, but say I only could handle about 25 to 30 students a semester. So I was taking care. I was like the live-in dean or whatever. I was like, so they would send me these either graduate students or senior students who still had one semester left in their institution because they had to go back. But anyhow, they sent these kind of, some of them were really remarkable students. Some of them I think were students they wanted to get rid of, but I ended up taking care of them for a semester, and I had this, I thought, brilliant idea of hiring an adjunct professor from one of the institutions to be the mom. I was like the dad, and this would be the mom. And so the first one was fantastic, but she had actually lived with the students, which we housed in the YMCA on the Upper West Side. And we had a beautiful studio.
Well, what, the mom, so to speak, had to live with the students? That was
yeah, she had her own room. Yeah, I know. This was sort of it was more than a halfway house because they were really involved in the art community. But these students were not, they weren't all kids. Some of them were actually older than I was. But they were sort of mostly the first time out of their school, out of their state, out of their parents, you know, so they were running amok in New York. And it was like, I'm sure it took 10 years off my life. It lasted 7 years. I say to everybody, everything between a natural childbirth and a suicide happened. Those two things did not happen, but everything else did. And I was like, I had to work a lot of off hours to keep things going.
And the program essentially, as the institution saw it, was what exactly? It was kind of this introduction to New York and the art world there.
Yeah, it was a studio program. They all had studio. I built them out studios in a really nice building downtown, and they had I got somebody to come in and do a seminar every Monday on contemporary New York art, which were like Tom Lawson, a lot of people, John Yao, a lot of people, Gene Silverthorne, a lot of sort of up and coming writer artists, and so that's why I think it's privileged education. And every week I would take them to Eric Fischel studio or Leon Golub's studio. They would do studio visits. And I would pay the artists a whopping $100 to do this, and they all loved it. I mean, pretty much all of them. Richard Prince, when I called him, he was very hesitant. He thought that they were going to be touching his paintings and everything. And when I mean, he'd still be talking if we hadn't left. He just really loved it. The students were great. So he was said, "Oh, I'll do it again." And he was one of the few artists that gave me the $100 back and said, go buy them some pizza or something. So anyhow, it was a great program. It only lasted 7 years. It had an untimely death because of the dot-com recession. And I was getting this tuition for each of those students to run the program. So these colleges were losing, they were losing students. They were downsizing. They were laying off faculty, so I can understand. So they ended it because they couldn't. They wanted that money back, coming back into their coffers, not going out. But it's too bad because it was a really remarkable program. And
I see. That's wonderful because it was actually coming out of their tuition. They were the school
tuition
was using.
Yeah.
So the students didn't have to pay extra. It was a.
Yeah, and this was not run. I mean, I had a boss. My boss were, well, I had many bosses. I had I had 18 college presidents, 18 college deans. They all wanted, a piece of me in some way. You know, it was a real weird middle management job because I had to deal with, a huge bureaucracy, and then I had to deal with the students on the other side. So that's why
right.
I said it probably took 10 years off my life. But anyhow,
right. I can imagine just knowing the stress that most feel in academia when they're enmeshed in university requirements. Often, I mean, it seems that
I would also have faculty members come in halfway through the semester to give a talk about their work and to go around and do studio visits with the artists. So I was trying to get everybody involved, so everybody would love the program, and all the politicking against it may not be so severe. But anyhow, it worked while it worked, and then I moved on to the Marie Walsh Sharp Art Foundation Space Program, which they hired me to run a program for artists. So I moved from art students to artists, and also from academia to a foundation, and I thought I died and went to heaven. I mean, it was just like it was so much easier. It was so less political, and the artists coming in were really great because they had an advisory committee of Chuck Close, Philip Pearl, actually a heavy Yale content. There was Janet Fish.
And who founded that? Who founded the foundation?
That was Marie Walsh. It was from Colorado Springs. It's amazing. It was founded by these people who were, very Republican, very, I don't want to say born again, but they're very religious, very conservative. Yet they funded this program, which wasn't cheap because they brought in these artists. There was... Initially, there were 14 studios. About 1,400 people would apply from all over. It still exists from all over the United States. There'd be a panel of the advisory committee, two members from the advisory committee, and then three other. They would pick three from the outside, and they would pick the. Then it became 17 finalists when we moved to Brooklyn to Dumbo. And then there were alternates. While I was there, I was there for 21 years, there were probably 700 artists that went through. It's still going on. It's called the Wolintas Sharp Studio Program, or the Sharp Wolintas Studio Program. I don't know which, but it was turned over to the Wolintases a couple of years ago. And it's a really good program, and I would recommend all the graduates from Yale to apply to it, but the deadline is January 31, though, so they dismissed it. But anyhow,
That's for the studio program in New York City. That's on 16th or something, isn't it?
No, it's in Dumbo. It's on J Street in Dumbo, 20 J Street, and the studios are beautiful. And it's an incredible deal. The problem is, there's no stipend involved. You get 24-hour access to the studios, and that's about it. You get an open studio twice a year at Christmas around or the holiday season, and then at somewhere in the spring. And then
you have to apply for those studios, and they're given to a group of artists. Is that how it works?
Yeah, they're picked. By point system. It's a it's 3 days looking, even with slides, you know, if there's 1,400 and there's 8 slides for each applicant, that's a lot to look at. And it takes, you know, and then there's 3 rounds where you go from 1,400 down to maybe 300, and then you go from 300 to 70, and then there's a silent selection. Anyhow, for me, it was okay. I was running the program for them in New York. After a while, other than the artists were interesting, but there is actually no program involved. It was just they got the studio. That was it. And I thought I wanted to start a program that had a program. So I started the International Studio Program in 94, and it exploded. At that time, PS1 was my competition, and there weren't many residency programs at that time.
I mean, the PS1 had the studio program. They had a type of studio program there as well, the international program.
Yeah, they did, and it was very well known and been around for 30 years or something, and everybody thought highly of it, and especially Western Europe. And I did too. I didn't know any better, but actually the sponsors were not happy with it. And so when I opened up I opened up with 12 studios in Tribeca, I thought it would take a couple of years or 3 or 4 years to even get some people signed on in all the countries that I thought, you know, I was signing contracts with ministries of culture, ministries of foreign affairs. And I thought, I'm Canadian, so I thought Canada would come in first, and I was very tight with the Netherlands, and I thought the Netherlands would come in, and of course they never came in.
Well, wait a minute, let me stop you there, just so everybody's clear on that, because I think I understand what you're saying. But the way you started it was you had this series of studios where international artists would be housed, and you began building relationships with ministries of culture, because those ministries of culture would send their artists and also fund that and pay for that. Is that the case?
Yeah, you got it, except that they weren't living there. These were only studios. And then I started getting them apartments. Some of them said, well, we'll come in, but you got to get me an apartment. So I took the apartments out of ISCP because I wanted them, the liability was too much. If something happened to one of those apartments, the whole house of cards could come down. So I set up a different corporation for the apartments. So we had like about 4, at the most, 14 apartments. So not everybody, because at that early there were 12 studios, but then it gradually grew to 26 studios, and currently it's 36 studios. And it's really a lot of money to be raised. And when I was building it, I found it very exciting, and the staff got larger, and we got more real estate, and you know, and you could see the growth. And then we went from Tribeca to Midtown, and then we moved to this incredibly beautiful building in East Williamsburg, where it is right now. And as we got more space, like we have 20,000 square feet now, they We need more staff, and if you have more staff, you need more benefits, more health care, you need more money. And so my job, rather than, I like the building part of it, but the running part of it got to be raising money. And that was, I had a model that I thought worked really well in the beginning. The model was I would sign a contract with these people that I got to know who were in the ministry, or, you know, and mostly Asian and mostly Western European, but then a lot of money in New York funded the Balkans and Russia and areas that were underfunded, where they had no experience, former Soviet bloc countries, where they had no experience of sending artists abroad. And also the idea of a residency program, most bureaucrats can't get their mind around that, because there's no instant gratification. You know, the artists come and they develop, and that's our purpose, was to help them develop their work and their careers, and to get them exposure in New York, and not to necessarily put them into Chelsea, but to get them into shows that they're, most of these artists are not what you normally, this might sound wrong, but it's not normally what you would see in Chelsea. These are artists that are more under the radar. They're really good and they're highly respected, but they have a political, social content to their work that is probably not that saleable in the sense of Chelsea. I'm probably going down the wrong stream with this, but anyhow.
No, you're not. But it's clear what you're saying. You're saying that the work that was coming out of there wasn't work that looked like it was made for the market. It wasn't work that looked like it would be in Basel, flying off the walls, kind of thing.
Yeah. No, it was, and
I think that's important to talk about, because that's part of why they were selected. It's a different way of producing work, perhaps, or that was encouraged.
Yeah, it wasn't like this was a manifesto from us to the sponsors, we call them the sponsors, but it just worked out that way. Mostly the European sponsors. For example, I like painting probably more than anything, but we have very few painters there. It was mostly archival, people coming in with film, video, it was sort of...
A lot of research-based projects.
Yeah, a lot of research-based, site-specific. They wanted to work with the exciting part for me towards the end of the we started doing these off-site projects and working with other institutions, or working with other, like, say the Department of Transportation gave us a lot of money to do stage events throughout Greater New York. That was really interesting. And then we have a small little gallery space. Called Museo de los Soros. It's in Williamsburg, and it was the wealthiest area of Williamsburg, but they wanted artists there that would work with the community. So our artists can have the space for a month or two, and they can do a project in it, but they have to bring in the community on some level. I really liked that. I thought that was, and so we had to find funding for that, because the sponsors weren't paying for that. And the funding for that came through, the very generous funding came through the Department of Cultural Affairs from the city here, especially from them, NEA, you know, the usual suspects. But then a lot of foundations stepped up, and we have sort of a separate budget for that, and it's open to the artists in the program to they can compete for these. You know, there's a selection process always, and it's really interesting. And then, for example, like the Department of Transportation will give us their maximum is $5,000. They can't do a whole lot with $5,000. So all these one Taiwanese artist wanted to do something in bronze in the Hell's Kitchen on a bicycle platform area. Anyhow, it cost like $22,000. So he went back, and the Taiwanese government paid for it. It was done in the foundry in Taiwan. Everything. I wrote Bloomberg this letter saying this is exactly what you want, because he started the fund, Urban Arts Fund, and it's managed by the Department of Transportation, because they have all the sidewalks and all the piazzas and, you know, on ramps and everything in the city, and that's where they wanted this work to be, and preferably in neighborhoods that had never seen contemporary art in their life. So it was pretty interesting. It still is. It's still ongoing. So,
and part of the reason it's successful also seems that what you were saying earlier. I mean, the idea was also introducing these artists whose work, you know, for lack of a better word, maybe wasn't what Chelsea was showing her in the marketplace and in some aspects, but you were introducing them to New York and helping them with their career, so to speak, and engaging in the art world. How did that happen? What is, do you think, the most important thing that were introduced to these artists by the program in terms of helping their careers, in terms of what that even means in the art world?
Well, they approach these whatever some of the things were you could apply for, like the Department of Transportation. Other things, they would come to us. Like one artist wanted to build a love room, what he called the love room, and it was near Exit Art and Hell's Kitchen. There was a big billboard that came off. And he did this in Berlin. He's a terrific artist, Etienne Boulanger. And he built this sort of like a Motel 6 kind of standard motel room that would go in there, so that you would go in off the street, go in this office building, go up through these offices, climb through the window, and get into this room that had like functioning water pump, that, you know, it had a toilet, it had, and I thought that he did this in Berlin, and I said to him, like, he was only here for 3 months. I said to him, you've got to stay in New York. It's just going to take 3 months, and we've got to raise a lot of money to get this going, you know, and we can do it through ISCP. And so we were planning to do this, and I thought this would bring him a lot of notoriety. I think the art community here would love it. Unfortunately, he was the only artist in the program that died in the program. And it, before it got off the ground, he had a heart attack and died.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. It was horrible. I that's the worst.
And young guy. He's a young guy, too.
32 years old. He was riding his bike across the Williamsburg Bridge, and I got a call at 8 o'clock at night to come to the hospital right away, because he had a heart attack, and they found he had my phone number. And anyhow, by the time I was trying to get out of the door, they said he's gone. You know, so, I'm trying to explain that was the project that was really, would have been really visible, would have created a lot of, the other ones are much more under the radar, kind of sort of subtly. Like, I used to work for Robert Irwin, and he used to, like, I thought some of his best work was where he would sort of just, like, he would take a subway station and do something very subtle that you wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't be a very subtle light thing that would be going on, or like what he did at PS1 when they did that big show, I can't remember, East-West show that they did at PS1 a long time ago. Anyhow, the program is great, and it's got a lot of things happening since I left it. I left it a year ago, and my successor, I think, is fantastic, Susan Hefgood. And I was just talking to her because I wanted, since I was going to be talking to you, and I thought maybe this would come up, but what's going on now, and how I don't know who your audience is, but if they're artists, which I'm sure they are, that there's all sorts of ways of getting into ISCP if they're interested.
Yeah, well, there'll be links on here so they can learn more about that as well. And
yeah, if they go to the website, you don't have to have the sponsor. like there's two ways of getting in. One is with a sponsor partner. That's what I described earlier. The other is you can apply directly to the website.
That's exciting. And so that I mean, I know you're involved in other things, but your involvement continues there in terms of an active board member, which I presume means you have to continue the fundraising efforts to support all this.
Yeah, well, you know, when founders, like I was a founder and I had two other people that I worked with really closely over a period of 30 years, and they founded two foundations. And looking at how they did it, is that, like, founders are usually taken out in a gurney, or they go mad, or they're fired for some egregious act, you know. So I thought before all three of those things happened to me, I would quit. And the reason I quit was it wasn't getting easier. It was getting more difficult. And, you know, as I said earlier, it gets compounded. The bigger it gets, the more money you have to raise. And I was just burnt out from raising money. And I was, the only thing I sort of miss about it, not the only thing, but the main thing I miss about it is the incoming artists and curators. They're really interesting. And I like, they're not kids. I'd say the average age is about 38. We rarely have artists in their 20s. We rarely have artists in their 70s, but we do have both of those. And the other thing is, I want to just mention about that, we did a survey with the alumni about 6 years ago, and we got very high marks for all the things. But we had an independent person organization do it so that we couldn't fiddle with the figures or anything. And we got very high marks for our field trips, for our guest critic series where we bring in guest critics every 2 weeks, and all those things, and all the talks, and we put on things constantly in exhibitions and stuff. The only criticism we got that was repeated by a number was that there weren't enough Americans in the program. And that was really, really true. And I my mantra at the beginning was it was easier for me to bring in an artist from Sofia than it was from Kansas City. And it just was money for bringing in from the Balkans, there wasn't for Kansas City. So we started this program last year. I just started it before I was leaving, and we're going to announce it, inaugurate it on March the 9th at the Borough Hall in Brooklyn. And there's going to be hopefully a lot of politicos and press there. But we're starting this thing called the Ground Floor, and it's only for New York artists, and it's for Brooklyn artists, or, you know, it could be for people coming to New York, for example, like your graduate students from Yale could apply, or, you know, it's a possibility. So I think that's going to really change. And it's more of a, we have different projects for them. It's more about developing their career, the profession. So we bring in people who talk about how to get grants or all that stuff, which a lot of people, I mean, the Bronx Museum's been doing that for years with AIM. And
right, with the artists in the marketplace. So those are things that are more about, you know, everything from marketing and website to reaching out to curators and doing all of that.
Exactly, and that is that the international, like we have three floors. So this is the ground floor, and then the second and third floor are the international artists. But they mix because we have these events all the time. We're finding out that the ground floor has been going on since June, so we already have an idea of how it's going. And the artists on the ground floor are New York artists, practically mostly Brooklyn artists, and they have their ears to the ground more than the international artists. So they have been taking the international artists around, which is what we had hoped, how this mix would work. And I think that was the criticism that the international artists wanted American artists in the mix so that they would have another, you know, another contact, another, you know, and I think it'll, you know, it's just in its fledgling state, but I think it'll be a great asset to ISDP.
That's exciting. Yeah, that's great to hear. Well, Dennis, thanks so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate your time, but also what you've done, because I think the program has shaped and helped a lot of artists.
Well, thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.